And joining me right now here on the Mark Mosey Show to go latest on everything going on in the world of basketball. This guy does a great job as the head basketball coach at Florida Tech. He's my good friend, Billy Mims. Coach, how you doing today?
Mark, I'm doing fantastic. I mean, triple header NBA action that was off the charts last night. Unfortunately, our Magic didn't quite get it done, but we'll break that down. But, man, I tell you what, NBA playoff time at its best when you get triple header action as good as last night.
It was awesome. It really was. And I'll start with the Magic. That was the most exciting game I have ever seen. I know they lost. It's disheartening. But when I think of the last decade or so, me watching this program, as I'm going to call them, that was phenomenal. And they kept fighting and they kept making stops. And Paolo looks like a superstar. That was awesome to watch as a basketball fan. How about you?
Well, again, remember, these two teams ought to be on pretty level playing field, okay? Yeah. It ought to be a great series. I think it should be a 7-game series. Think about it. In the regular season, only one game separated these two teams. So Cleveland's got the home court advantage by one game. They were 48-34, I believe, in the regular season, and the Magic were 47-35. There's not a lot between them on paper, and as you're seeing now in the games, not a lot between them on the hardwood either. You know what was interesting to me, Mark?
What?
So in the three losses right now that the Magic have at Cleveland, here's what's interesting to me and how big home court is in determining who the better team is, okay? Because look at this. The three losses the Magic have had at Cleveland, game one, they lost by 14 points. Game two, they lost by 10 points. Game five last night, 1-point loss. So the Magic are getting closer and closer and closer to beating the Cavs in Cleveland. They might have to do it in game seven to advance to the second round this year. And think about this. When I look back and say, okay, they're down 3-2 in the series, but they have competed in every game in Cleveland, and last night they had a chance to win in Cleveland, whereas on the other hand, Cleveland's been blown out twice in Orlando. So, to me, home court is a big, big factor. If it were flipped around, if the Magic had won 48 regular season games and Cleveland had won 47, the Magic would have the shot at four home games in a 7-game series. That one game difference in the regular season could come back to haunt the Magic. But as I said a minute ago, they're getting closer in game one, game two, game three. If they continue on that trend, game seven should belong to the Magic.
All right, we're here with Billy Mims. You've been a coach for a long time. You are the OG, as I like to call you, behind your back. All right? I'm sorry to tell you that. You have all this basketball knowledge. All right, let's go over this. They're down 2 points, 15 seconds to go. They have the ball. Jamal Mosley, who I think should have won Coach of the Year, he doesn't call timeout. And they just go with it. And Franz drives the rim, something he's done all season, but this time Mobley went with the block, which was phenomenal. Would you have called timeout in that situation?
Well, I probably would have, because you know, every coach has a philosophy, okay? And, you know, Jamal Mosley, I think a lot of, he's a great guy. I think he's a good basketball coach. I think he's brought a really good culture to the Orlando Magic team. And, you know, myself and my assistant coach, Joey James, and Juwan Holm, our staff, we've been over there and we've taken part in the Orlando Magic coaching clinic that they offered to the public over there, to local college and high school coaches in the area. So it was a great outreach from the program over there to the community. And you learn a lot about guys when you get an opportunity to exchange basketball ideas with them. One of the things that they talked about at that Orlando Magic coaching clinic that I think is critical for a lot of coaches and fans to understand. Every coach has a philosophy of what they're going to do in that situation. If you're down two, if you're up two, if you're down one, up one, if you're down three, up three, and there's how much time left on the clock, they have a philosophy. And one of the things I learned about the Magic and their head coach and their staff was that they look at the analytics, and they looked at the analytics to base, well, what are we going to do in that situation? They trust the analytics. So I have a feeling last night that Jamal's decision there in that final critical seconds not to call timeout is what they, even before the game started, they could have said, okay, we're going to be down two and X amount of seconds on the clock. We have the ball. Are we calling timeout? They would answer no before the game even started. They're going to go with their analytics in that situation, and they've chosen to say we're going to play through it. We're not going to stop and give Cleveland a chance to talk about what we might do. We're going to play it live, and everybody's got to adjust on the fly. And I respect them because that's their philosophy. Then there's other coaches that go with their gut. Not analytics, they go with their gut. And what's the difference in that? Analytics look at the number percentage from every game you've played. What's happened in that situation time and time again? It also even looks at the analytics of what's happened with the opposition in that same situation that they're up to, and they're having to play defense in the waning seconds. What have they done? So analytics looks at the whole big picture of the entire season, okay? When I say some coaches' philosophy is to go with their gut is going to be based on that game, probably the immediate, what's happened tonight? Who can I put the ball in? Who's got a hot hand tonight? Who's carried us in these playoffs? It's going to be more of the moment than of an analytical breakdown of the entire season kind of thing. They study analytics night in and night out, and those analytics get adjusted for every single game of the season. But the gut is a at-the-moment type decision. So, again, I'm going to say some coaches go with their gut. Some coaches have the decision made even before they get in that situation. Well, I think the Orlando Magic knew what they were going to do before it got to that point. They went with the analytics. They went with what they traditionally do in that situation. And you know what? It probably was the right decision. But again, Evan Mobley, I mean, oh my goodness. That was an incredible defensive play. Franz Wagner has been amazing all season. He's my favorite player for the Orlando Magic. I enjoy watching Franz Wagner play. And last night, so you know, you got the ball in one of your best players' hands. He makes a drive with time running out, down two. If he gets fouled, what if he scores and gets fouled? We're all telling a different story this morning. So,
yeah.
Again, the decision was probably made before that game even started that in this circumstance, in this situation, this is what we're going to do. The players knew it. The coaching staff knew it. They ran with the analytics and stuck to their guns. But that never accounts for an incredible play by the opponent like the block from Evan Mobley last night.
Okay, we're here with Billy Mims. You would have called timeout, though, in that situation.
I go with my gut. I hate to say it. I'm one of the gut coaches. You know, I'm old school. The new school loves analytics. They love the numbers. But I think that's like playing Vegas. When you're looking at the analytics, say, but the numbers don't lie. Wait a minute. Nothing in the analytics is 100%. It might be 99% against 1%. It might be 90 against 10. Who knows? But the analytics are never 100% accurate. There's always going to be, well, yeah, most of the time this happens, so let's go with it, but sometimes it doesn't. Well, I don't like to base that sometime on that moment in time. That's when my gut kicks in and says, you know what? The analytics might say this number, but my gut's telling me right now I want to put the ball in this guy's hands. Now, I know a lot of other people would say, too, Paolo Banchero had 39 points last night. You know, what a game by that guy. What a stud, you know. But at the end of the day, I think a gut decision on my part, I would have probably called timeout, gotten the huddle with the guys, asked the guys, kind of looked at, you know, my players in front of me in the huddle, what do you want to do? What do you guys think right now? Who wants to take? I like to look at the guy and say, who wants this play? who wants the ball in their hands to win the game right now. And you can tell that. A veteran coach, you can tell that when you're sitting there looking them in the eye, square in the eye, Mark, who wants this play. And I love a guy that even before a coach gets to ask that question, you sit in the huddle, look at him, and one of those guys says, "Coach, I want the ball." Because you know what? At that point in time, I'm going to draw up a play. I'm going to put the ball in that guy's hands, and we're going to go with our gut and see what happens.
Well, you saw in this game, Paolo wanted the ball, and he had the green light. And I'm not kidding around. He was making, like, LeBron James-type jumpers out there in the half court, and he was knocking them down. And I don't think he's ever going to be LeBron James, but he's making superstar plays out there. He had 39 last night. He really did. He missed.
Well, look at his numbers, Mark. He was 14 for 24 from the floor.
Yeah.
You know, well over 50% from the field. He was over 50% from three. He was 4 of 7 from three last night, which was the best performance in the game. Strus for the Cavaliers was 4 for 10. But, you know, 4 for 7 is a heck of a lot better performance than 4 for 10.
Yes.
He had 8 rebounds, second highest on the Magic. Wendell Carter Jr. had a great night on the boards with 11, but Banchero had 39 points, 8 rebounds, 4 assists, 14 of 24 from the floor, 4 of 7 behind the arc. He had an all-NBA performance last night, and, you know, I get it. You know, in that moment in time, maybe that's the guy that should have had the ball, maybe should have made the play, but it is what it is, and like I said, we can all second guess what happened on that last play, but it could have easily just been just as easily a foul, make two free throws, tie the game up, go to overtime, or it could have been an and one, take the lead, win the game. It could have been a much different outcome.
All right, here's a couple things. When we're here with Billy Mims, head basketball coach at Florida Tech, he does a fabulous job. All right, I was there for game four. I was there on the court pregame. I walked by Mobley. He is a tree in person. Like, this guy is, I know you've got a lot of big players of Florida Tech. This guy is a giant. Franz Wagner is 6'10 as well. So if you're a mere mortal like you and me, where we're not 6'10, yeah, you're going up in the tower there. These are the trees going up for this layup. What's weird is he blocks it. It still almost went in as a layup. Like, it hit the backboard. Like, it's a weird play. Here's what I would have done. I agree with Franz taking the shot. Remember, the play before they go out of timeout, he goes and gets a quick layup, scores. So then they're down two. Cleveland misses. They don't call timeout. Here's what I would have done. You talk about the gut. I would have gone for three. Let's cut their heart out and let's get the win and get the hell out of here. Forget going to overtime or the tie. I would have gone for three.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that, Mark. I'll tell you why. For your listeners out there, you sound like a true basketball coach right now.
Yeah.
Because the game was on the road, and there's an old saying in coaching that on the road, you go for the win, not the tie. If you're at home, you go for the tie because you're at home. Give us 5 more minutes on the floor with our fans. Now, saying that, look what happened to the New York Knicks last night.
I know.
They got 5 more minutes in the garden, and it didn't help the Knicks. It actually helped the 76ers.
All right, I want to ask you that. Okay. You know, wait, we'll get to the Knicks in a second. Let's just finish up here on the Magic. And I love this conversation.
Sure.
I really do.
Well, you sounded like a coach there, Mark.
I'm
That's
ready.
Why I had to bring that up. Because, you know, that is the coaching gut philosophy. On the road, go for the win. Take the big three. You're down two. Take the last shot of the game. Hit a big three. Go for the win. If you're at home and you're down two, generally you don't go for the three to win. You drive it to the basket because there's two possibilities. When you attack the basket, the possibility is if you don't make the shot, you get fouled. Now you get two free throws that could tie the game. The other possibility, by driving to the bucket, it's an easier shot. You're closer to the rim. You make the layup. Maybe you get fouled in the old-fashioned three-point play to win the game. So you got a couple of options. If you shoot the three, the odds are they're not fouling you shooting the three. They're going to contest the shot, but they're probably not going to foul you. So much higher risk trying to go for the the win. So on the road, you take that risk. At home, you drive it to the basket, try to get it to overtime.
We're here with Billy Mims, head basketball coach at Florida Tech, recapping that Wild Magic game. They lose by a point. They're going to play game six on Friday night there at the Kia Center. I keep forgetting. I know they changed the name. here's the thing. The franchise is waiting a long time to just be in this situation. And this has been a 3 or 4 year project to just to get back to the playoffs. They're in the playoffs. Even though they lost, and I'll get your take on this. For those young guys that they've really built this team around, like Paolo and Franz, Jalen Suggs, right? Last night's experience is everything. They learn from this. That you always talk about, we need playoff experience. Or for your Panthers, hey, we got to make the tournament, right? We got to get postseason play. Yeah. It helps us. I think that was just, it meant so much to them to be in that situation. And now Franz is going to learn from that situation. And Paolo's going to feed off this. And I'm very optimistic, and I know I'm a very optimistic person anyway. I'm like, okay, we got something here. And I think if they can get them some real shooters from the outside and keep building this, I think this could become a contender moving forward. That's what I take out of last night. I think they win game six, and I think they go seven. But I think that was big last night, just being in that situation. Because honestly, I know I'm venting now, where I've been here since 2013, coach. I've been waiting for this. Like, waiting. Finally, the local teams got postseason action. And the story I'll tell you is, so I went to the grocery store before the game started last night, and I'm walking in. This guy walks by me. He's got the Magic hat on and the shirt, and he had a look on his face like, when's the tip-off? And I've never really felt that, okay? And I looked at him, and I told him, hey, man, go Magic. Let's get the win. And the look on his face, it was like, let's go, baby. And I was like, that's what I've been missing here on the coast for a decade now. And that gets me excited. So I know I'm venting, but I just had to tell you that, coach.
Oh, what a fantastic story. Think about it, Mark. You don't actually live in Orlando. You live in Melbourne, Florida, an hour away from Orlando, and there's a Magic fan in the grocery store who's fired up about the game. What do you think it's like over in Orlando? Wow. You know, if you were in the grocery store over there last night, they might have had the checkout girls dressed in Magic jerseys and Magic hats and Magic socks. You know, at the end of the day, when a team is winning, when they're rolling, when they're starting to turn the corner, and that's what they've done this year. They're starting to turn the corner. You made a great point a moment ago. The one thing that's let them down is consistency behind the arc.
Yeah.
Last night they were 9 for 31, 29% behind the arc, whereas the Cleveland Cavaliers last night, 13 for 37, 35% behind the arc. That was the difference in the basketball game. Simple fact, you know, they lose by 1 point, but Cleveland made 4 more threes than the Magic. That's kind of, when you're in a game where toe-to-toe the teams are pretty evenly matched, the Magic actually out-rebounded the Cavs last night. I think Orlando had, I want to say, 43 boards in the game last night, and I believe Cleveland had 39. So you're on the road. You out-rebound the opponent. I thought that was huge for them. As far as assists go, unfortunately there, Cleveland had more assists than the Magic. But again, I think part of that comes down to the fact that they knocked down 4 more threes than the Magic. Usually when you hit a three, it's off an assist. Usually threes aren't one-on-one basketball and knock down a three, unless your name happens to be James Harden, because James might dribble the ball 12 times and then step back and hit a three.
You're absolutely right. I'm still angry about losing. I hope you know that.
I hope you know. Well, look, I'm going to be positive now, too. I'm going to say they're coming home and they're going to – I think you're exactly right when you said they got something out of that game last night.
Yeah.
I believe that too, Mark. I think what they got out of that game, some of those young pups grew up a lot in that game. Maybe we're watching them grow up right before our eyes in this whole series. Because remember what I said at the start of this conversation?
Yeah.
They lost game one there by 14. They lost game two in Cleveland by 10. They came home and blew them out twice at home. Then they go back for game five, and they have a chance to win it. They lose by 1 point in game five. So every game on the road has gotten better. Every game on the road for the Magic has gotten closer. Mm-hmm. On the flip side of that, Cleveland haven't come to Orlando yet and looked dominant. So I strongly feel that what the Magic got out of that was two things. They got some maturity out of they've grown up on the road in this series. When they lost game one by 14, there might have been a little doubt, right?
Yeah.
Game two, they got a little closer. Then when they came back in game three and really looked good at home, their confidence level increased. You're seeing a team that's gotten two things out of the series so far, maturity and confidence. What helps you down in a seven-game series? Maturity and confidence. So if they come back and have another blowout win in game six in Orlando at the Kia Center, then you're going to see a team that's matured in this series and a team that's going to go back to Cleveland confident. If they blow Cleveland out in game six, I think I'm going to give the Magic the advantage in game seven in Cleveland. Now, if Cleveland come back and really compete their socks off in game six, then game seven could be anything goes. It could go either way. It could be very tight. It could go down to a final shot at home for the Cavs, like it did last night for the Magic on the road. But at the end of the day, I believe game six is going to tell us which way this series is going to go. Cleveland, in my opinion now, they have not gotten better at home in the series, and they haven't even shown they can compete on the road.
Good point.
So they need to prove to their fans and their team that they can come to Orlando and compete. Otherwise, if Orlando have a big win in game six at home, I think Orlando will have all the momentum, the maturity, and the confidence it needs to go to Cleveland and upset the Cavaliers and win game seven. But remember, how much of an upset do you really consider it when the course of the entire 82-game regular season, only one game separated these two teams?
I told you this before. The whole Eastern Conference was separated by one game after a while with all these records outside of Boston.
It looks like that when you watch Boston and Miami net right now, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And how about this? If you're looking at the Milwaukee Bucks and the Indiana Pacers, my Lord, Milwaukee is shorthanded about as bad as any team in playoff history ever has been. To have Giannis Antetokounmpo, a former NBA player of the year, one of the best players in the world right now, not playing, one of the best shooters and big game scorers in Damian Lillard, not playing. I mean, how can you have your two biggest superstars? That's like, could the Denver Nuggets even compete?
No.
The Lakers would have knocked the Nuggets out if Jokic and Jamal Murray don't play.
You're right?
If those two, Murray and Jokic don't play,
they're toast.
Denver's got no chance to win. Yet the Milwaukee Bucks are dominating at home with their two best players sitting on the bench. But again, I'm telling you, as you said, I agree. The top eight in the Eastern Conference were not separate. Look at the Miami Heat as the eighth seed a year ago going to the NBA Finals. And once again this year, again, if they had been fully healthy in this series, I wouldn't put it past the Miami Heat to upset the Boston Celtics. It's going to be tough for them now, but they haven't been healthy. But there is not a whole lot separating one through eight in the East.
All right, let's end with this. One more basketball question. I know you're a busy man. I appreciate your time. We're here with Billy Mims, head basketball coach at Florida Tech. All right. So you're there at the Garden. The Knicks, I still don't understand how they lost this game. My question for you is, and I know inside the NBA, Shaq, Kenny, they're all yelling about this. Barkley last night. All right. The Knicks are up 3 points. There's 10 seconds to go. Philly has the ball. It's full court. Don't you foul if you're New York, so then they have to go to the free throw line? But then Maxey shoots this Caitlin Clark, Steph Curry 37-footer. I would not have taken that shot. I'd be like, this is the stupidest shot possible.
Listen,
what is your thoughts?
As soon as he put the ball on the floor in the backcourt, I'm at home. I'm three up. He puts the ball on the floor in the backcourt. I'm fouling. I'm sending him to the line for two. And then even if he makes them both, we're one up with the ball. We're going to win the last – we're going to win the play down the stretch. We're going to make the play that we have to do, make free throws down the stretch to win the ball game. I do not believe – in giving them a chance in that situation, giving Maxey a chance to tie that game and send that game to overtime. And I'm telling you, and you know this, I've coached against Nick Nurse, and I'm watching Nick throughout that game. I don't even believe Nick thought that they were going to get a three off. I thought Nick Nurse felt like, surely New York is going to foul us, and therefore we're going to have to go to the line and shoot two. There's going to be three more possessions in these 10 seconds. This is not going to be a kind of 1-2 possession finish here in 10 seconds. This thing is going to go further than that. And I think the fact of the matter is, as they came up the floor with the ball, I'm fouling them in the backcourt before they can even think about getting a shot off, because now the worst-case scenario, you get the ball back, you're one up, you're going to inbound it, they got to foul you. But we've seen some crazy situations in these playoffs already. Right. Inbounding the ball in the final seconds, look at what the Knicks did already one time early in the series.
Yeah, game
in
two.
In the Garden, right?
Game two, yeah.
Yeah, they came from behind with seconds left. Because why? Because they got after it in full court situations, and Philly couldn't get the ball inbounds. Now, I know people might say, oh, wait a minute, if you talk, but there was a foul on that play. Well, that was a hustle foul. Last night, the no foul was a stupid no foul because that was a coaching decision that was an easy one to make. Let's don't give these guys. But again, remember, that decision might have already been made by analytics before the game even started. I hear Shaq and all those guys screaming, foul, foul, foul. Thibodeau should have fouled. But how about, like I said before, the worst-case scenario in his eyes, they make a tough, contested three from 37 feet, or we go to overtime and we're at home, right? Coaches like to go to overtime at home. They like to be in that situation. So I'm saying if I'm Thibodeau, maybe I've already made my mind up that if we're three up with seconds left, we're going to take our chances on whether or not they can hit a long-range logo shot contested. And if that happens, we go to overtime. We're in the Garden in front of the best basketball fans in the world. We're confident we can win this thing. The problem is, I think the confidence went – it was like somebody stuck a pin in the balloon. The confidence went right out the window when that shot went in. The Knicks, you could see that they – when that shot went in, the Knicks had thought – this is over. They weren't thinking, hey, we got five more minutes in the Garden. The MSG fans, the best basketball fans on the planet, let's go win this game. Let's kick some butt now for five more minutes and put this thing away. No, it was like somebody stuck a needle in their blimp. The Goodyear crashed to the floor, and I thought the 76ers, after that shot went in, including Nick Nurse, the entire 76ers said, hey, we're going to come back and win this game now. And they did.
And they think they're going to win game six now. And we'll be right back at the Garden. I'm not kidding. Because they should have won game five or four. It's wild, dude. And that was
I'm telling you.
What?
If you look at it like this, I mean, they should have won an as you're saying, the Sixers should have already won an earlier game if they had been able to hold on to a late lead in the Garden. You know, they should have already had a win under their belt when they were struggling, to get the ball in bounds. And the Knicks came back and stole one from them. So last night it was kind of, okay, you got one from us, we'll steal one from you. And they certainly did last night. But I think, again, I believe it too. I think this is going to be a seven-game series between two very evenly matched basketball teams.
That was very Reggie Miller when he scored, what, the 8 points in 30 seconds? Whatever. You remember when we were in the 90s? It was against, you know, Indiana. That was what it was. And yeah. I'm telling you, that was not a set shot three. That was a heave. And if I would have done that in NBA 2K 100 times, I'd miss it 100 times. But for some reason, it was like we're watching Flubber, the Disney movie, where all of a sudden the ball just goes in. And I think, like,
I think the whole crowd is like, hey, you know what? What?
You know what the funnest thing I thought was last night? You know, you always get Spike Lee sitting courtside, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's New York, you know? Mm. There's always going to be Spike Lee there. But last night, the stars, the celebrities, the TV stars, the movie stars, and, you know, that it's New York City. They're going to be there. I mean, singers. Sting was in the crowd last night. I don't know if you saw that. Yeah. They were like, you know, oh, look who's courtside. There's Sting. And, I mean, you know, some of the top television, movies, singing stars around the world were in the Garden last night watching that show. But the most enjoyable thing to me was seeing all the great former New York Knicks players. Patrick Ewing sitting there enjoying it. People cheering him on as he's cheering on the Knicks. Walt Frazier sitting there. And you could go on and on and on. But last night it was like a hall of fame of New York Knickerbockers in Madison Square Garden. And I think, I don't know if there's another franchise in the entire NBA, maybe in the whole sports world, Mark, that would support their team like the New York Knickerbocker family supports the Knicks. To come out of a big game like that, that was pretty neat to see. I hated it for the crowd. I hated it, you know, for the Hall of Fame Knicks family that was there. But I tell you what, I still think this thing's going to go seven. Yeah. And back in the Garden in Game 7, You're going to see even more celebrities, more superstars, and more of the Knicks family courtside cheering that team on. Because this is a Knicks team that they've – you talk about you have been waiting for the Magic for years to get to the point that you can be excited about the Magic in the playoffs. Well, the Knicks have been waiting even longer. So this is a throwback to the Willis Reed era, to the Earl the Pearl Monroe era, to the Walt Frazier era, you know, to the Dave DeBuschers. This is a throwback to when the Knicks meant something in the NBA. This Knicks team, and Tom Thibodeau, I know he's your ex-Chicago Bulls coach, but he's done a really, really good job this year with the New York Knicks. And believe it or not, I still think the Knicks are going to win this series in seven, but I believe it's going to be a dogfight to the end.
Oh, yeah? Well, Maxie could tell that crowd, add me to the list of great players that have ripped the Knicks' heart out.
Okay.
At the Garden. His name's Billy Mims, head basketball coach at Florida Tech. What? What are you going to say?
Hey, different from this interview. The difference in this interview and the Knicks 76ers series is the series ain't over yet.
No, it's not. Coach, thanks for your help. Have a great day, all right?
You too, Mark.